All right, folks, welcome to episode 33 of the Without Limits Ace and Hammer podcasts. Hammer is not with us today, but we have Aaron Kolk joining us, professional triathlete and coach for Without Limits, and a take care of all the pros of the White Lake Pro-Am coming up this weekend. That's our conversation today. Aaron's already mocking my hair.
Looks like he just got out of bed.
No, well, I got out of bed at 5:30 and my hair looked the same. And then I ran 12 miles and just got out of the shower. So, you know, that's better. Better than just rolling out of bed. Looks like you just rolled out of bed. You're the one with the bed in the background, dude.
Yeah, I know. But that's the benefit of being bald, though, I guess. You know, you don't ever have to do anything with your hair.
That's right. All right, a little history on White Lake. White Lake Triathlon, for all the triathletes out there, it started in 1998. Bill Scott teamed up with Goldston long time ago to produce the White Lake Triathlon. It's been going on for a long time, really. When I moved to North Carolina in 2006, it ended up being held over at the FFA Center in just outside of Elizabethtown, North Carolina, kind of in the middle of nowhere. And the tradition was in Wilmington, a lot, especially in Wilmington triathletes, but really all over the state, is people would rent these cabins. And it would kind of be like this whole camping experience the night before, and there was lodging there, and it was kind of like this little beach resort in between two docks where the swim start was. And the lake is beautiful. It's a spring fed lake. It's real shallow, so it heats up pretty quick and cools down pretty quick and gets wavy really quick. I mean, it's kind of an interesting lake. There's a lot of currents and stuff, but it started a long time ago. And then I think it probably really was at its peak around 2008, 2009, and 2010, right? That's kind of when the triathlon boom was happening. You weren't even doing triathlon yet, but
no, I didn't start until 2017.
So that's when it was actually my first half. It was great. I mean, there was probably 1,000 people, not in the half, but total in the day. I think there was probably 500 in the half and 500 in the Olympic, because they had the Olympic and the half on the same day back then. But it's graduated, you know, it lost its luster for a while in the mid-teens when triathlon kind of took a dive. And then in 2020, there was no triathlons, hardly, except for two. The YMCA Riceville Beach Triathlon, we got approved to have. And then Aaron and I held a half distance for 50 triathletes in White Lake. And we held it at Goldston's Beach, which is owned by Jake Womble now and the Womble family. And he's redone the whole place. When we first started the race there, Jake was in the process of kind of taking it over, redoing the whole area. And it wasn't even done yet. He was like just starting. Now it's immaculate. It's really awesome. I mean, he's really done some amazing things in 4 years. But tell us, Kolk, if you don't know Aaron Kolk, you can look up his profile, iamwithoutlimits.com. He's broken 9 and a half in the Ironman, not officially, but in his hometown Ironman that he did. But he's looking to...
I broke it in Chattanooga in 21.
Oh, you did? Oh, okay. Yep. Sorry about that. So he broke 9 in Chattanooga, and he's broken 4 in the 70.3 here at White Lake. But tell us about that first year when we did fit, when we had 50, Kolk.
Yeah, so I guess we decided to go for it once 70.3 North Carolina was, when it was canceled. And, you know, we just wanted to give a home and a place for, you know, some people to race, our clients to race and friends and athletes and everything. And then 2020 was supposed to be my first year racing professional. And it was kind of just a, hey, I want people to race too. And so I invited all the people, you know, that I knew, and then I was able to get a email list from the PTO of all the North American pros and invite them out. I want to say we had about 15 male and female together pros come out that day out of the 50. And then, you know, that was
we did prize money too, right?
Yeah, we had, I want to say it was it 4,000?
We used all the race proceeds, and I think that Aaron and I both made $100.
No, I didn't even make that. I remember I helped, what was it? We went to a burger joint on White Lake Drive afterwards, and I bought JP and Lindsay's lunch for helping me break down the course, and that was all the money I made in that for that race.
So that was one of those where we were like, well, this is super fun, and we did it, and it was great, you know, it was fun. And then triathlon returned, and we contacted Bill Scott from Setup Events, who's been really, really great to work with over the last 4 years. Bill and I get along pretty good. We're both blue collar, blunt, tell each other how it is. It's how it goes. But we're like, Bill, look, we want to help. We want to make this thing a pro / amateur event and grow it. So Aaron was able to secure a $10,000 prize purse the first 2 years. And it's slowly blossoming.
First 3 years, right? First 3 years. Oh, well,
the first 2 years, the first 2 years, the $10,000 was paid actually by sponsors. Third year, the race paid for some of that, and then sponsors paid for some of that. And then this year, we lost a little bit of sponsorship money, so we had to lower the prize purse a little bit. But we're, you know, partially we're for 99.99% we're doing this podcast for the triathletes, but 0.1% if you're a sponsor and you want to make the White Lake Pro-Am an awesome race and help us out, then calling all sponsors,
let us know.
But really, we've taken the sponsorship money and we put it back, you know, to try to increase the pro field and the enticing the pros to come from all over the country, which they are, to race, you know, a little bit more of an up close and personal event. So what does this event mean? Like, tell us a little bit about, from your standpoint. I've actually never raced White Lake half in this way, where we start at Goldstone's, the lake, the two loop course. Why don't you give us an overview, and all the listeners who we're going to send this out to, what they should expect on race day from the time they get there, swim, bike, and run. Let's start with arrival and on the swim. What should they expect?
It's a pretty smooth setup that morning of, where you can drop your bike that morning. You can set up your race nutrition. You can do all of that kind of stuff. We allow in-water warm-ups for the pros and the amateurs together, which is an awesome thing that you don't really get in an Ironman event, where, like, I know me personally, like, if I can get into the water, you know, you kind of get a couple fast strokes, you get a feel of the water, you know, and everything like that beforehand. It can really help your swim come race time. And so that's one of the things that we allow to have happen that's pretty unique to a lot of the different events. But yeah, you can, you know, you come up, it's pretty relaxed. It's a fun atmosphere. Tom's normally blasting some type of music over the big speakers.
Probably Van Halen.
Yeah, probably something 80s range. But yeah, we just had, it's a good, fun, exciting, relaxing atmosphere, a lot less pressure going in. But you go into the swim, and it's a double loop course. That we've done before. We have the little Aussie exit, which I think makes it pretty cool to see people mid swim. You can kind of tell where you are as an athlete in the pack. You know, I think we have 19 male pros signed up right now. So, you know, for me, it's kind of one of those things I can come through and it's like, okay, am I in 10th place? Am I in 18th place? Am I in 19th place? You know, where am I in the field? And then you can kind of know, you know, where you should be, or, you know, how hard you have to push that second loop of the swim in order to get yourself set up on the bike to get going through there. as an amateur, I think it makes it pretty cool to where, like, you can see the pros coming out as well as the spectators. You can see your family members, the people you're there to cheer on, you know, see how they're going through the first loop, and where they're at. Just, it's another touch point to see everyone.
How is it coming out of the water, getting back in, and then swimming through the age groupers?
I would say when I did it, what was it 21 I did it or 22? I think it was 2022 that I did that. I don't remember it being that big of a deal in the second loop where, you know, going around, because it's kind of spread out by that point. And the biggest thing I do remember is, like, when you kind of pop up, it's kind of figuring out when do you actually stand up and run out of your first thing, because it's a pretty shallow lake once you kind of hit the pier there. And so it's like, okay, how long do I want to run in the water versus swim in the water? And that really jacks up your heart rate. And then you have to come around, dive back in, and then start your swim and, you know, get your rhythm again swim wise. And so I would say it's more about the heart rate elevation and managing the heart rate coming around into the second loop than it is a worry about swimming through the age groupers.
Yeah. So what he's saying is, from the shoreline to the actual area that you can dive into the water and get a full stroke without touching the bottom, is probably a good 50 to 75 yards. So a lot of people, a lot of the pros I saw dolphin dive, but that takes a lot of energy and does jack your heart rate up. And so it is important to have a cue when you're going into the water to figure out, okay, when am I going to actually make the dive to start my swim stroke? And you're going to have to do that twice, right? When the gun goes off and then when you come around for the second loop. Let's get the elephant out of the room and talk about last year. Last year, we had the swim course set up, and it's a two-loop swim course, and that's what we promote. And I went and I was setting my audio up, making announcements, and I went back and looked at the swim. And the lake is kind of this, it has like a weird effect of you think things are closer than they are. And I look at the buoys and I'm like, God, it was like, that looks far, you know, like that looks like 1.2 miles, honestly. But we started the race anyway and didn't really like question much, just kind of rolled with the GPS markers that were put out there. And when the professional field was at the buoy halfway, and I looked at my clock and we were at 13 minutes, I'm like, it's 1.2 miles. Holy shit. You know, like, so I run over to Justin and I'm like, dude, it's a 1.2 mile course. They're not swimming twice. We got to tell everybody when they get out of the water that they're done with the swim, you know? And so the swimmers were coming in last year and I'm like, line them up, line it up. We're going to tell everybody right now they're done, you know? And so when the people came out of the water, they were, one, they had a confused look on their face. And then when they heard they were done with the swim, it was like immediate ecstatic relief.
Yeah.
Like
elation. Yep.
And I'm like, Bill, what coordinates did you use? And he's like, man, I have no idea, man. I don't know where those coordinates came from. But we figured out that 2 years ago, a set of events did an open water swim, which was a two-loop, 1.2-mile swim. So it was an Ironman 2.4-mile swim, open water swim. They did it for their fall tri-festival. And I think he used those coordinates. And so this year, we'll get it right. We'll get it right.
Yeah.
All right. So we've gone on a swim.
Swim's always been a little hiccup.
Yeah.
Swim's always been a little hiccup.
Not a great start.
2020? You remember 2020 when it was so foggy and no one could see the buoys? We swam about 2,600 yards that day.
Yeah. Yeah. That was like, you know, I set those buoys. And when you're out there, you can see pretty much everything. But then when the sun came up and it like didn't burn the fog off, like the sun was radiating off the fog, we started to swim and watched the pro swimmers swim nearly the opposite of the direction of the first buoy. And I'm like, oh my God, man, I could do a whole podcast on race snafus, things controlled and out of our control. It's incredible, but it all teaches us, right? All right, so we've kind of gone over the swim, tulip course, smooth. The water currents can be a challenge. The other thing that can be a challenge at White Lake is sighting into the sun, because when you are swimming parallel to the beach, if you are sighting to the right or breathing to the right, you're actually looking towards a sunrise. And then when you make the last turn, even though the sun is just a little bit off to the left, you still are going in the direction of the sunrise. So you do have to be cognizant to make sure your goggles have a defogging, some type of defogging cream. Mirror.
Yeah. I normally like the mirrored goggles coming in.
Or the mirrored goggles, whatever works. Just make sure you don't have foggy goggles, because if your goggles are fogged and you're trying to look into the sun, you're not going to be able to see anything. So sighting is number one for open water. So you transition. The transition's on a cement, big, huge cement parking lot. So there's no sand there's a little bit of sand when you come out of the water, but there's plenty of space to wash your feet off about 300, 200 meters?
If that. It's a pretty quick transition. I'm pretty sure I did it in less than a minute last go around.
Yeah. So Aaron, one of his specialties, I'd say one of his best sports, even though he's a previous runner, is his cycling is very impressive. He's done this course in 208. Is that right?
206.
206. So tulip course, it's exactly 56 miles, exactly two loops, 28 miles. It's pretty unbelievable, honestly, that it comes out to the T to be 28 miles per loop. So review the bike course with us. I know there's some spots where you have to, I want you to go over the turn at the gas station. And then I want, if you could let people know about how you would execute this type of bike course with the wind direction and, you know, remember the rumble strips on 41.
Yep. So a lot of, okay, well, I guess we'll start with the gas station. Normally there's a little bit of sand right there on that corner. So you just want to, you know, get out of your aero bars, get in the base bars and just be aware that there is sand. What's that going from? Is that 53 into 701? Is that right?
53 on a 701. It's pretty early in the race, about 3 to 4 miles in, if that. And it's a tight turn. We heavily cone it there. You have to slow down, but there can be, as much as we blow it off, there can still be debris that just accumulates on the side of the road.
So that's more just kind of a common sense. Be careful when you're taking a turn. There'll be a cop there. And so it's kind of, you know, just being aware of your surroundings like you should on any ride, in any race, anything of that nature. The big thing I would say on this course, with it being very, very flat and actually all of the curves not really being so tight that you can't stay in aero, like I would say for the 56 miles, you could ride this whole course in aero without getting up on any turn if you wanted to. Now, I wouldn't suggest doing that. I want to say there's 5 or 6 turns per loop. 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah, 5 or 6 turns per loop. And I normally will get out of aero for each turn, kind of get out of the saddle a little bit, just to loosen up the bike, put a little bit more power into the pedal, and just to kind of accelerate out of the curve. Only because it just gives yourself a little bit of relief, a little bit of change of position. Even myself training in Wilmington, where, you know, I can ride 115, 120 miles and, you know, down 421 and not, you know, not get out of aero the whole time. And, you know, I've trained and do a lot of race specific stuff, you know, in that position, but it's still good to just relax, you know, that's 15, 20 seconds each turn. And so maybe you're going to lose 3 or 4 seconds, you know, over the entire, you know, 56 miles. But in reality, that it's going to make you feel that much better in the final 10, 15 miles of the race. Just giving yourself that little bit of reprieve coming in and out. So you'll actually probably ride faster by doing that. When you look at the wind, some of this has to do with how you train. Myself, like, I do a lot of different cadences in training. So, you know, whether I'm doing low cadence work, trying to build strength, I'm doing high cadence work, trying to keep that neuromuscular connection with my legs, all of that stuff. I like to use my training in the races. So at some point in the race, you could be like, man, Aaron, like, he's a low cadence rider. Like, why is he riding at, you know, 75, 78 RPMs right now? Like, is he going to do that the whole race? And then on the opposite side of things, you could be like, oh man, Aaron's a super high cadence rider. He's riding at 9,500 RPM. That's really just because I've put those tools in my toolbox. So that I can use the neuromuscular side of things. I can use the strength component of cycling so that I'm not just using one energy system the entire ride. For the most part, on a general rule of thumb.
Can I intrude on that a second? So I remember I did the White Lake Olympic. It was right after I had surgery on my groin in 2021. And Aaron, he had really developed into one hell of a cyclist by that point. And when I was riding on 41, I was actually ahead of him out of the water. And I had no big gears. I had not trained a whole lot on the big gears yet. I was just like trying to get back in shape. And he blew by me on 41, but his cadence was like 70. And I was trying to spin high, because I didn't have the strength to do those lower gears. And that was it's exactly what he's talking about, is that he was able to use a pedal efficiency in the lower cadence by not missing his power distribution around his pedal stroke, which is very important in triathlon, because you can pedal all day. The higher cadence, actually, you're more inefficient because you're probably missing power around your revolutions, especially when you get tired. But in bigger gears, when you train, which is what he means by saying tools in the toolbox, he's training in those gears, 50, 60, 70, 80 RPM, practicing power distribution around the pedal stroke. Therefore, there's not really any place in his pedal stroke where there's loss of power, and then speed and velocity don't decline when you're riding into the wind. And I would say that's majority of triathletes, their biggest one of the biggest mistakes triathletes make is they don't have different cadence. They don't use different cadences in training. Therefore, when they get into a scenario of wind, there's really no other way for them to get through that wind except to gear up, because it's resistance.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, keep going. So that was my experience watching Aaron blow by me at 26 miles an hour, you know, pedaling at whatever he was pedaling at 75, 80 RPM. And I remember after the race, he goes, man, you should lower your cadence. I'm like, dude, I didn't have it.
Yeah. Well, and that was just one little snippet of the race. Like, there were certain times when I have a tailwind, I tend to ride a little bit higher cadence because you're getting blown with the wind.
Exactly.
And so you can, yeah. You know, and so it's just kind of being able to use variation so that you're not fatiguing in one thing, you know, and we can go into that when we get to the run portion too, in terms of how to use variation while you run so that you can actually run faster as well. But, you know, overall in the cycling, so I normally like to, you know, higher cadences with the tailwind, lower cadences into the headwind. You know, you may not want to be 60 and 105 RPMs. You don't want to have that big of variance, but, you know, maybe 70, 75 on the lower cadence ranges, 95 to 100 on the higher cadence ranges. It's the same way, like, if you're in the mountains or you're training on rolling terrain. on the downhills, you're going to have a little bit higher cadence. On the uphills, you're going to have a little bit lower cadence, just trying to build power. As well as I find a lot of athletes try to just stick to a certain power range. So it's like, okay, you know, I'm just going to ride, well, you know, 250 watts for this whole race. And you just try to stay at 250 the whole time. Whereas in reality, like if you can say, okay, you know, when I have the tailwind, let's look at my speed in comparison to my power and say, okay, if I'm going 250 watts and I'm going 23 miles an hour, if I lower it down to 235 watts and I'm going 22.8 miles an hour, is that extra 20 watts worth that 0.2 miles an hour for this 10 minute segment? And then you go into the headwind and you're like, okay, you know, the goal is 250 watts to average. But if I go 250 watts and I'm now going 21 miles an hour, but if I go 260 or 265 and I'm going 21.8, are those extra 10, 15 watts worth the extra 10, you know, almost mile an hour? And so you have to be able to have, you know, what I like to call athletic wisdom when you're looking at the data and saying, okay, what's the data telling me and how is it going to get me to race as fast as I can? So it's not necessarily about, you know, okay, I want to hit 250 watts. It's like, okay, that's probably where about my average is going to be. But if you want your average to be at 250 watts and that's going to give you 23 miles an hour, if you were to ride 240 watts and you still get 23 miles an hour, I would rather see 240 watts because now you're 10 watts lighter, so you're fresher for the run. Same thing though, if, okay, 250 is the goal, but if I ride 260, I'm going to go 23.5 versus if I ride 250, I'm going to go 22.8. Are those extra 10 watts worth going that much faster to make you slightly more tired for the run? Because in triathlon, it's not just about trying to have the fastest bike split. It's about looking at the race as a whole, what's going to get me to the finish line the quickest. So if I'm going to ride a 206 and then I'm going to run and I'm going to be able to run a 114 off the bike there, or do I try to ride 202 and then so you're now 4 minutes faster, but I can't run 114. I can only run 116 now off the bike. Guess what? I finished the whole bike run combo 2 minutes faster now. So I would rather run a little bit slower and push the bike hard. And so a lot of times that's going to be course dependent. It's going to be like, are you racing in a legal draft pack? You know, because 12 meter difference, you know, you do get draft benefit. And so it's about kind of calculating everything and kind of trying to figure out, okay, what's going to get me to the finish line fastest, not what's going to have me have the best bike split or the best run split.
And to that point, you know, what a lot of triathletes maybe are not paying attention to, or maybe they are, you know, depending on how in tune you are with your wattage on the bike. But if you're riding an interval split in workout, or you could look at this in race data as well, and we'll just use the 250 watt example that Aaron's been using. If you increase your wattage to 260, that doesn't necessarily correlate into forward velocity. That doesn't necessarily mean you're going to ride faster. You're adding more power to your pedal stroke, but it doesn't necessarily equal faster miles an hour. And that's what you have to figure out in the race is, are you giving more, but it's not efficient. Like you're not tucked enough in the aero bars, or you're taking on too much wind that, you know, because your aerodynamics haven't been worked on, or you're adjusting around in your seat too much and you're coming out of aero, you know, more often than you should, and therefore using more power, but not being as efficient. And we kind of talked about this in our last podcast about efficiency trumping the actual engine. You gotta be efficient, especially when there's resistance. Kind of like if you're on a hilly course, you know, you don't take your bottle of nutrition when you're going up the hill, right? Necessarily, because you're trying to be efficient and strong, you know, but maybe down the hill you can get tucked in and then focus a little bit more on nutrition when your bike's automatically going fast, you know? Am I right on that, Colt?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of that I would say is, you know, just kind of looking at the data, like, is it a 2% hill? Is it a 4% hill? Is it a 6% hill?
Sure.
You know, what's the downhill look like? And so, you know, that's where pre-race, you know, previews of the course.
We don't have hills in White Lake. We have winds.
Bit. Yeah, exactly.
But here's the forecast, you know, for, you know, since we're in real time here, you know, 7 a.m., 3 mile an hour north wind. 10 a.m., 5 mile an hour north wind. 1 p.m., 6 mile an hour north wind. So we're just going to tell you that based on the current forecast, relative humidity will be about 80%. The temperature will be about 65 to 75, and the dew points will be 63. So it's going to be a little muggy, not horrible, but very little wind. So probably calm water, probably a fast bike, and then expect a less cloud cover, which doesn't look like there's a lot, like thunderstorm moon in the afternoon. It'll probably be sunny. So, you know, it's going to be one of those medium warm spring days in southeastern North Carolina. So even though we're talking about the wind, you know, we've been at White Lake before where, you know, you get 10, 15, 20 mile an hour north winds and it's brutal coming back in.
Mm-hmm.
The town, but it doesn't look to be that way. However, on 41 coming back into White Lake, that'll be mile about I'd say 16 to 28, right?
Yeah,
16.
It's about eight to 10 miles
in, yeah. Yeah, 16 to 28 and then 48 to 56. If anything, you're going to have somewhat of a headwind, but mm-hmm. not a big one. And there's rumble strips on that side of the street. So you're going to want to make sure that you are paying attention to your front bike wheel and make sure that you don't wobble into the rumble strips. We do have that lane of the street closed, but it doesn't mean traffic. The police won't let traffic through for emergency purposes. So, all right, good on the bike course.
Real quick, on 441, is traffic allowed to go, I guess, towards
north.
East?
Well, so we have a permit to have that closed, but they will let people through based on there's a housing local housing up there that you have to let some people through, so it won't be completely shut down.
Gotcha.
But there will also be two bike water handoffs. We went above and beyond to get the Deer Park the water bottles that have the little sprout on the on the top. We couldn't find them anywhere, but we got those. So there'll be a handoff in the first 15 miles. I believe it's at mile 15 or 16. And then you get one at the 28 mile marker. And then again, at about the 36 to 38 mile marker. So there's three handoffs for water and a 56 mile bike. All right. So then you come into the transition, the run transition. It's a double out and back. So again, spectator friendly. Go ahead and give us a synopsis on the run.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much completely flat as you go through. The one thing I would say is the camber of the road on in the shoulder, it's slightly so closer to the grass is slightly lower than where it is. So sometimes you can feel like your hips are a little bit off. It's not really that big of a deal, though, but it's enough to notice if you're, you know, if the legs are pretty tired as you're going out there. You know, the primary thing that I think along White Lake Drive, you got some shade going through there, so it won't feel too hot. When you take the left onto 701 for that out and back where we hit, you know, we start to hit the greenway a little bit in there and whatnot, it's not really shaded, so it can get hot. I normally just suggest to hit the aid stations, make sure that you're getting the fluid and the ice, you're taking enough nutrition in as you go through. But as I go back into the, like what I was saying in the bike with the variation, In Kona in what was it, 2019, when Jan Frodeno won and he ran what was it, 2:42 in Kona, he walked every other aid station. And so there is no shame in walking in an aid station to make sure you're getting the proper nutrition, as long as when you take that 15 to 20 second walk break, you are able to get back into that harder pacing. So one thing it does, it'll settle your heart rate 3 to 5 beats a minute so that you're not going to get quite as much cardiac drift throughout the whole race. It allows you to get in the fluids. That's another thing that causes your heart rate to spike is once you get dehydrated. I normally suggest about 1/2 mile to a 1/4 mile before the aid station. If you're carrying gels, you start to take in that gel. So you got about 2 to 3 minutes to, take in a gel. So you get water, you get your ice, and then you get through it. And so by walking for 15 to 20 seconds, maybe that's going to slow your mile pace down by 3, 4 seconds a mile. So it's pretty minimal. So if you think that's what, how many aid stations we have on the course? Three
Four,
per out and back,
four,
four.
yeah.
So that's total 8 stations. If you're losing 20, we'll say 20 to 30 seconds of total run time, you are more than going to gain that back by not bonking because you got in the fluids you need, especially if it ends up feeling pretty hot during the day. And it's not necessarily you have to walk, but what I would say is if you start to feel like that bonk is coming on, taking that walk break is very, very beneficial. And just kind of having that mental clarity. Another big thing that I think about too, and Tom and I talked about this on when he paced me for a 5K last weekend. When you are bonking, you're losing that sugar. It's lack of brain function. And so the best way to enhance your brain function is to put sugar in you or the ketone IQs that Tom's been using a lot, which I can let you talk
Give
about
those
those
guys a
in a little
shout
bit if
out.
you want.
Yeah. No, I mean, anything else on White Lake?
Yeah, that White
Before we
Lake's
get
just,
into our little training here.
yeah, well, I mean, White Lake specific, I would say, just making sure you're staying consistent and that, you're able to run well throughout.
Yeah, White Lake is, again, we'll have about 350 race. It's a great event. I mean, I enjoy going up there. It from a setup standpoint, having this double loop idea is great for race production because it allows us to keep track and keep an eye on athletes, and people get to see each other. And I really highly recommend, athletes out there, who are looking for something other than Ironman. No, nothing against Ironman. We have a great one here in NC. I've been to them, high production event. But there are other things, and we like to do, we love what we do. We're not a giant company like that. We're putting on your local triathlon that is growing, and it's loved by our staff. We love doing it, and we love the people who come to it. And so we're going to take good care of you when you're there. And I even bought cookies from Costco, the chocolate chip ones at the end. So good. When all the athletes are on the bike course, I go over there and just mound on those cookies. But Goldston's has like a
But
breakfast location. What's that?
did you get cream cheese for the
Yep,
bagels?
cream cheese for the bagels. No cream cheese. Better stuff. But they got a breakfast location. They got an arcade. There's a bar. It's gonna be nice weather. Gonna be good hanging out weather.
I think
But
there's a
yeah.
new Mexican restaurant that opened up on site too, isn't there?
Yep, there's all kinds of good stuff up there they got, and everything opens up this weekend. But yeah, let's quick talk about, we got about 10 minutes left here. That race this weekend. Cole was injured all last year and he's getting his butt back in shape, but he asked me to pace him in a 5K on Saturday in Mayfair, which by the way had the best post-race food.
It
Dude, I had
did.
like three plates of breakfast food there. Oh my God.
At least
I
three
felt
plates.
great the next day. I was recovered because
Yeah.
I ate so much egg salad And that fruit and those, oh man, I could go for that right now. But yeah, so we had a fun workout. I had a fun workout Saturday. I did a 6 mile warm up, then did a 3 mile tempo, and then another 6 miles back to the race site. And then I got to the start line and we wanted to go 5:20s for 3 miles, but then we went out in 5:12. And then Colt elbowed me at mile two and he's like, I'm gonna break 16. What was going through your head there, Colt?
I mean, I was very surprised. So I don't think I've been under 5:20 in a mile in probably a year and a half. Just because I wasn't training, and the overall speed, that hadn't been the focus of my training. We went out there, and I just felt smooth and controlled. Through the first mile, we did a turn. Actually, I think we had what. Roundabout circle and a turnaround,
Four
and
turnarounds.
then basically four U-turns on this whole course. But right at about at the 2 miles, like I was just feeling smooth, feeling good, and I did some quick math in my head, and I was like, oh, I haven't broken 16 in a while. That would be kind of fun to do. So I was just sitting on Tom's shoulder, passed him a little bit, and then mentioned, I said, hey, we might as well try to break 16. We're close enough. The big thing I would say, and I told Tom this afterwards too, is like as soon as I put expectation onto what I was trying to do versus just letting my body do what it knew it could do, it got substantially harder. I never ne necessarily felt awful during the race. Like I didn't get into puke zone or where my stomach was tightening up or anything like that, like it normally does in the last 1,000, 1,000 meters of a 5K. But I will say that like the legs definitely got heavier as soon as I started focusing on a time.
Yeah, sometimes it's good not to look at the watch, and rely on the watch. I think a lot of people today, racers from anywhere from even the elites, some of the elites, all the way up to your 6 hour marathoner and 30 minute 5K, way too reliant on the watch. And Aaron and I both at practice observe this all the time, that when we don't necessarily give paces, when we talk about effort, people run faster because they're not thinking about it. And even in like in this race, right when Colk said it, we dropped from 5:10s, and then the next, like the segment drops to 4:57, 4:55, like right away. And then we had to hit that wind in the home stretch, but it was a fun workout. And now I have someone coming over to run on the Alter G, so I got to let you go or let the podcast go. But this is a good one. Aaron and I are going to be doing Tri-Talk here every at least every month, especially over the summertime. And we'll talk about Aaron will stay up with the current triathlon events and give some updates and hopefully some previews of the courses coming up. I know a bunch of people are doing Chattanooga. And so we'll try to give a preview for that one, which I know nothing about because I've never been there, but Aaron does. So we'll be back. Any last words of encouragement to anyone doing White Lake Pro-Am half?
Now, like we can finish it good on what you just said, focus on being in the moment and letting your body do what it knows how to do, and don't put the pressure on yourself.
I just have fun out there. We'll be playing good music. If you have any requests, go ahead and email me, Tom at IamWithoutLimits.com. I'll play your music. Take care.